weeks, it's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Sitting across from me, Mike Costantino. We got Klaus Van Stutterheim.
Stutterheim.
Yes. I'm sorry, Klaus. I feel really bad. You know, I actually have a half of a German ancestor.
It's only been about 2 years. Yeah. I understand.
And you want to introduce our guest today, Mike?
We call her, a lot of you know her, by Frankie Reamer, but Frances Julia Reamer, professor at Northern Arizona University, is going to talk to us about the gender roles and climate change. The gender roles and climate change, which I have to admit is, and we can talk about climate change in general. We have a really active organization here in Northern Arizona, and I'm going to get the name right, the Northern Arizona Alliance for Climate Change. They had a group in Cottonwood last week at the Christmas parade. They collected a lot of signatures. They're trying to, and certainly a lot of people, and I'm sure all of you, quite frankly, this is one of those things that, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you say, I'm not sure about any of them. You're making plans for the future, and climate change is such a huge
And apparently, Mike,
disaster hanging over our heads. It seems like it's one of those things that does make you a little hopeless.
More and more people, apparently, according to an article I read, are being convinced that climate change is occurring. We have this massive pushback effort to claim that it's not happening. But do it. So, Frankie, tell us a little about you. You teach what, cultural anthropology, and what do you specialize in besides climate change and gender issues?
Sure. So thanks, guys, for inviting me today. It's great. It's my second time on your show. I'm really happy to be here. So I'm a professor at Northern Arizona University. I'm an educational anthropologist, particularly a feminist anthropologist. So I teach in the College of Ed, and I also teach in women's and gender studies. And, of course, I'm very interested in the role of gender in the world writ large. And as a member and a board member of Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance, I've had the opportunity to speak on gender and climate change, which was not something that I've been thinking about until I had the opportunity to speak. And when I started to put together the data that we have on climate change, I became very aware of both the effect of climate change on women, but also the effect of women on moving legislation and policies around climate change forward.
I guess the central question, Frankie, is why gender? Why women and climate change? Why that? We've had many climate change shows. We should have a lot more. But this is like a different focus than we've heard before. So tell us a little bit how you came to this. I know it's your background in feminist studies.
So what I think is really interesting about this topic is that when we start thinking about issues like climate, well, first of all, as Mike said, we all know about climate change, but it's one of those things that we don't really think about on a daily basis. We might think we're feeling more rain, it's colder, it's warmer, but it's easy to think, well, that's what the weather's like, or that's what happens, or we live in a place where there are too many fires. But when we start thinking about who's affected and how people are affected, when we start using what feminists call an intersectional lens, where we look
Well,
it's when you look at gender combined with race or class or ability or age or sexuality. When we start thinking about the world and the ways that we live in it in intersectional ways, we start to understand that people experience climate change differently. And women and children, since women and children are in the majority of poor people in the world. Most poor people are women and children, in other words. Women and children are most affected by the effects of climate change. And then what happens? This is the really interesting part for me. Once you start thinking about those connections, you move to the notion of climate justice, which says that climate change is not something that simply affects all of us. It actually affects some people much worse than others.
So you're in Central America, for example. You're a woman in Central America. This is an area of the world where climate change is going to impact very heavily. It's low-lying, it's tropical, and it believes that this area is going to be heavily impacted. We may be seeing it with all the people fleeing Guatemala and San Salvador. Most of it's violence, maybe, but part of it may be just the crop failures and stuff. Some people believe that part of the Syrian revolt was because of a huge failure of crops and climate change in the Syria area.
Frankie's I'm going to get this in right now since we're talking about issues of social justice, which certainly landed her on Democratic perspective. Issues of social justice and gender inequity and climate change. As she's already said, and we're going to explore a little more fully, that most of the people affected by climate, going to be affected and are affected by climate change, are women and children. And this is what she's saying by gender being a primary social injustice in climate change. But we live in an area, maybe it's everywhere, where we still have climate deniers. We still, every day on the news, the media seems to like to, I'm like that we haven't discussed, we haven't wasted time discussing whether it's real or not. Okay, it's real. It's science. This isn't Fox News. This isn't Sinclair. It's a real, real, real thing, and it's really going to. But I want to talk about what climate change is going to do to everyone, regardless of gender. The women and children will be impacted more. But we're talking about what? Refugees.
Can you give us a portrait, say, in Central America, how it's affecting what Mike's talking about?
Or, there's interesting research on Katrina, the effect of Katrina, which we all remember Katrina, right? And so if you think about gender and the ways that people had to negotiate the hurricane coming in. First of all, if you go to a shelter, shelters are very dangerous for women, right? They're dangerous places. There are dark places. There's much sexual abuse that happens in shelters. Women are also the people who are caregivers. They're the people who are watching the children, the old people. And so when there are disasters, women are necessarily compromised by all of the places, all of the responsibilities that they have. If you think about places like Central America, if women are involved in getting water or using firewood for fuel, and those are jobs typically that women have, then the effects of climate change, of course, impact women and women's jobs, women's activities. 70% of the world's farmers are women. And so if climate change then affects between 40% and 70%, if climate change affects the capacity to farm, it then affects women's work.
So are you saying that it's in poor countries predominantly that you see this gender division, right? Not in Western, quote, well-to-do economies. Or am I wrong about that?
Yes, in the punitive ways. But in Western economies, surprisingly, it tends to be women that more often pick up the mantle for climate change initiatives. Mary Robinson is a very good example of someone who's a climate change leader. We just heard Nancy Pelosi come out on Friday.
Right.
It's Monday, right?
Yep.
Friday, talking about the existential challenge that climate change poses for all of us. We think about Greta Thunberg, who mobilized youth, I'm giving myself goosebumps, across the world by her work. And researchers say that women have taken the lead because women have seen the damages that's caused by climate change. And women are in a position to think about how do we care for communities.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's women are impacted by the effects, and they are responding more and more effectively and efficiently to the effects. Women's role in the climate change, I hate to call it a fight, but certainly discussion is pivotal and may and will be the deciding factor.
Certainly in the U.S.,
two things. I said I was going to do this, so I'm going to hold this under Frankie's face here and say that she's going to be talking about this Thursday, January 16th at Yavapai College, right there on Black Hills Drive, probably in M137, Building M, at 11:30. Thursday, January 16th, at 11:30, she's going to be giving a little talk on climate change about the very things we're talking about this morning without all these men interrupting her. she'll be able to develop a thought and follow it through. So please, if you have some more, if you need some more information or if you want to get involved with the Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance, show up Thursday, January 16th at Yavapai College in the room that they do everything over there and certainly in Building M. This is an angle. You know, we're talking about climate change and millions of refugees. I want to throw this in, even though we have this guest with all of this.
No, strictly forbidden.
We're going to do it. Wall Street is buying up all the water rights of Washington State. In other words, water, because the more water you give to crops, the higher yield you have. We're talking 5, 6, 7, 8 times. All of eastern Washington is irrigated. They are buying water rights in that state kind of as a test so they can do like an Enron. In other words, they will be selling water to the highest bidder. This is almost unconscionable.
I think there have been riots even in South America by the privatization of water systems in Western South America. I believe in Chile and in Peru and stuff, Bolivia. They tried to privatize the water systems. People suddenly found they had to pay a lot of money, and they don't have a lot of money to start with. It's caused conflict there. So there is what Mike was saying is that there's this. Capitalist sort of accumulation of water rights. Water is becoming valuable and saleable, and there's a desire to control.
Let me make the connection between climate change and water. You know that there is. Often less, there's less in the aquifer. There's certainly less surface water as things heat up. There's less water available for crops. There's less water available for everything. Is the one of the connections between the amount of water and climate. So I'm going to ask Frankie Reamer. She's talking about gender and climate change. As climate changes, as water disappears, we have some developments going up around here. It's a big topic of conversation. Will we make water a public resource and take it away, all possibility of privatizing and monetizing water sources in the United States, even federally or state by state, because Wall Street playing games with people's let's take the state of Arizona. If they did that here, so is it going to happen? Will water become a public utility?
Well, there was an article in the Arizona Republic a few days ago. My colleague Beverly from Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance sent it to us that states that the very same thing is happening here in Arizona, where the wealthy are buying up the water table. And we know what that has meant also in terms of fracking and the rights that people now have bought to be able to frack under people's land, which, of course, affects our water. Our watershed. Interestingly, there, not to make this too academic, but there is an Indian woman, Vandana Shiva, who started her activist work around water in India.
Say the name again.
Vandana Shiva.
Okay.
She organized women against Coca-Cola privatizing water in India. And of course, if water is privatized in places like India, where women are responsible for getting water for their homes, women are affected. They have to walk more. There's less water for the family. She and another academic, Maria Mize, wrote a book called Ecofeminism that connects public domain of water and other resources to feminism, and to so making the connection between the environment and gender.
So when I tell my 16-year-old granddaughter to hurry up and save the world, I'm not kidding, am I?
And next week we'll be talking to people about a development right here in Arizona, right near Sedona.
Exactly.
Klaus, tell folks a little bit about it, because it is about water, right?
We're going to have a broadcast next week here, 8:15, same time, that will be devoted to the proposed Spring Creek development in Cornfield.
Cornville.
And we'll talk about it then, but the developers, just to throw out one thing, the developers claim that 5,000 more people on both sides of Spring Creek are not going to have any effect on it. I personally find that proposition preposterous, but we will be talking about that next week.
So everywhere we look, Frankie, there's issues around water, there's issues around... I would think that particularly women farmers in the third world are particularly affected by climate change that affects water supply, but even temperature, it will cause crop failures. There's going to be a movement of the temperature north. Some people are going to benefit from climate change if you're in Canada, for example, and some people are going to lose. Some people, if you're in a high area, a mountainous area, you're not going to see it direct effects. If you're in a low-lying area, whether it's Miami or Central America, it could be pretty catastrophic, and I think the recent stuff is that it's going to be quicker than we thought originally, than scientists thought originally.
That's
so,
right.
So
that's
what
right.
Can women do about it?
Well, I was just thinking about a point that connects both what you're asking and what Klaus said earlier, that what we have also found is that when there are more women in government, we have policies that address climate change. And we've seen this in Europe, where we have a higher percentage of women. And that reminds me that when I spoke about climate change here in Sedona, someone asked, well, what should we do? How can we turn the tide? And my neighbor, Ernie Strauch, who's been very, very vocal in our community about developments that don't take water into consideration, raised his hand and he said, I think that we need to elect a female president. And I might agree with that.
We are listening to Dr. Frances Julia Reamer. She's a professor of educational foundations at Northern Arizona University in women's and gender studies. She's an educational anthropologist, and today she's talking about, she's on the board of the Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance. We're talking a lot about women's roles in climate change and climate change in general. We made a big deal of Donna Michaels, who's running for
supervisor.
And her PhD, so we're sort of giving Frankie's PhD short shrift.
Oh, my
gosh.
So
we're going to say,
we've got to correct that,
Dr. Frankie Reamer, PhD. We'll get it on both ends for her.
You want to say that again?
Thank you.
We didn't say that for Donna Michaels.
So let's go back to Frankie.
Let me put one more plug in, that on the 18th of January, we hope that you'll all join us for the Women's March here in Sedona. And you can look on Sedona Action Network's webpage to find specific information on the Women's March. That's a great time to come together, meet people from all organizations in the area, and do some rallying around these issues.
What's the date again?
It is Saturday, January 18th.
And you're probably meeting at the high school again or not?
Check the details on Sedona Action Network.
Yeah. Toby Friedman, Sedona Action Network, is a very valuable resource. I send out the link often, at least once a week. People ask me questions. I send the link to Sedona Action Network. Check it out. Toby's doing a great job with that.
Frankie, so let me ask a question. We've talked about a lot about the, quote, suffering that women undergo because of climate change, but you also think that women may be the way out of this quagmire, or at least will be able to help the situation. Can you spend some time on that? How is it that women are going to, you know, help us get out of this?
Well, as I said, women have been taking the lead in terms of climate change. I already mentioned Vandana Shiva. We talked about Greta Thunberg. There are many women that are stepping up. Women who are entering politics, and we know now, especially since 2016, that there's been a real movement to get women into office at the city level, at the state level, even on the Energy Commission here in Arizona, a very important place, right? And we have Sandra Kennedy on the commission, who fights constantly for alternative energy to push APS to move away from fossil energies to renewable energies. So I think that Sandra's a very good example. I think that this kind of very short talk makes it seem as though these are all anecdotes that I'm bringing forward. But if we also think statistically, again, when we have more women represented in government, from the local to the state to the national level, we see policies moving forward that are kind to the environment, that promote sustainability, and that, of course, are more community-minded.
Once again, folks, I want to make sure that we like to get into the subject right away on Democratic perspective, and we're talking about climate change. It's so huge and broad, and the angle we're taking this morning, of course, is a kind of women's roles, and we have an expert here, Dr. Reamer, one of the things I like to do also is we bring these experts on the show. We try to share this factual, truthful information. That's what Democratic Perspective is all about. So getting to know this person sitting here is also what it's about. Dr. Reamer is author of Working at the Margins, Moving Off Welfare of America. Listen to this list of diverse subjects. Working at the Margins, Moving Off Welfare in America. She's co-editor of Qualitative Research, An Introduction to Methods and Designs, and editor of Front and Backstage of Tourism Performance, Imaginatives and Bucket List Venues. I love that. You'd have to see that one, Imaginative and Bucket List Venues, as well as author of book chapters and articles in a range of journals and texts. She's a Fulbright Fellow affiliated with the University of Botswana and a recipient of the National Academy of Educational Spencer Postdoctoral Fellowship.
Let's not forget that she lived in New York.
And she lived in the strangest foreign land of all, at New York City, where you do have to have a passport. One of the things we talked about before the show is she's working on her current project is the gender roles in niceness. It was certainly something I worked on in college, believe it or not, and we'll compare notes later. But it's not going to be a surprise to anyone that women are nicer than men. But how that happens will be interesting, and I'll look forward to reading it. But today we're talking about climate change.
So there's two aspects of women that I hear from when you're talking.
Thank you, Mike.
Two aspects of women and climate change. One is they're impacted more heavily than men, you say, in the effects of climate change. And the other is that they're more deeply involved in dealing with climate change politically, economically, I suppose, and organizationally. And is this true pretty much worldwide as well as in the U.S.?
I actually think it's more true worldwide than it is in the U.S., possibly because climate change initiatives worldwide have been a focus for the last 20 years, at least, if not longer than that. Whereas in the U.S., we have been struggling with, right, big coal, fossil fuel money that has convinced many, many people that climate change doesn't exist, that it's a myth. And so climate change has been politicized, I think, in the U.S. in extraordinary ways. I mean, really, the right has been extraordinarily successful in making climate a political issue.
It's also something we notice, Frankie, that in the rest of the world, conservatives are not disbelieving in climate change. They might disagree with liberals and progressives about some things to do about it, but pretty much everybody all over the world agrees, except in the U.S. In the U.S., we have this powerful extractive industry. We have candidates who basically are funded by these industries, who can't get out of the Republican primary, let's be frank, without support of the both kind of quiet, hidden support and open support for these things. So we're the country where denial of climate change is the most active, and it has a strong economic basis. So what can women do to help overcome that?
So, it's fortunate to be here because most of my activities are by their nature nonpartisan. So I work at NAU and I am nonpartisan in my job as faculty member, as professor. I'm on the board of Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance, which is a nonpartisan organization.
They have worked very hard to be nonpartisan. We want to say that. We promote them a lot on here, but they appeal to both sides.
Well, and this is a very difficult issue, as many are, right? As many issues, particularly around women, since women are also politicized, right? Women's reproductive rights are politicized. Women's bodies are politicized. But so this has been an issue that's politicized. And we know that we have one party on the right that has actually pulled back on legislation around climate change. And then we have had another party that has come out 2-3 days ago saying this is an existential threat to humankind. So I would say what we can do is we can elect individuals to offices, state, local, federal, and think about issues like climate change as forefront. If we get people in even our state legislation who have science-based, evidence-based ways of making decisions, we can then start to move these issues forward, which is why it's so important to register to vote and to vote for individuals that are moving our concerns forward, not those of the power companies.
I had a question that just occurred to me. The younger generation obviously is much more frightened of climate change than, you know, the people who are sitting around this table today. And let's say just 30 and below, is there that same distinction, a diversion between women and men in their, and, you know, worry about climate change and their determination to do something about it? Or is it just in people above 30?
Well, I like to think that we're getting better and better at raising good men. And so, and I have a son who those of you who know how wonderful my son is. And I think
I'm the first mother to say that.
I guess, I'm sure. And I truthfully feel that, you know, at least since the 60s, we have been thinking about in this country, we've been thinking, and all over the world, what does masculinity mean? And so I currently teach an undergraduate class, women, gender identity and ethnicity. So I have, and we're meeting today, actually, for their final projects. We have 5 men. And 35 women, which I would say is not too different from the representation on the board of the Democrats of the Red Rock. So statistically, we might have this. I don't know statistically if we look at the young people's movements around climate change. I would personally imagine that Extinct Now, which is a more radical group, may have more men. I don't know those statistics, but I would argue that young men now have become more and more aware of the world around them and more aware of their responsibilities in that world. However, I do err on the side of optimism, I have to say.
The first time I heard the phrase, leave it in the ground, it was from a young man. And I'm not, now this is,
sure,
we could,
absolutely,
somebody out there can track the origin of this phrase. But the idea of leaving the fossil fuels in the ground, it's hard to imagine an older man, saying that, and I think even an older person, we're so trained to go after natural resources because of their value. And yet young people don't see, they see the cost benefit. They're not seeing the cost benefit. A climate changed world is not worth taking the fossil fuels out of the ground. They see that clearly.
Yes.
Where a 60 or 70 year old, and I'm speaking in general here, don't necessarily see it or are harder to convince.
Also, old folks, people, guys, gals, tend to think they'll be dead by the time the impact of climate change really hits. Whereas if you're 20, in your lifetime, there's going to be major, major, major effects.
Speaking of women saving the world, Rachel Maddow's book, Blowout, for God's sakes, you know, that the oil and gas industry, and she talked about on C-SPAN about her book. I mean, so not only did she talk about in the book how the oil and gas industry has killed, or at least attempted to kill, the whole climate change movement. Now it's so huge they can't kill it, but they're still trying to mitigate it. And she says it's going to be interesting to watch how this industry made up, this oil and gas industry, how it's been such a huge part of the economy, such a huge part of the lives of men for so long. That how is it going to go out? It's going to go out. It's going to have to go out. Whether climate change is catastrophic, whether climate change is controlled, oil and gas is history. Some people think that the reason our government, that the United States, as you said earlier, is the only one, and you can help me out on this, is because our male leadership is so closely aligned with the Russian male leadership, and their economy is almost solely based, according to Rachel Maddow. The only thing in their economy is oil and gas. If they had a more diversified economy, we'd have a different situation today.
They decided that they had so much natural resources that they didn't need to, say, build their industrial base and building computers and stuff. It's been a decision of the Russian leadership. I guess my feeling, and I'll see if Frankie and you guys agree, is there's now been a kind of tipping point in favor of understanding climate change in the U.S. I think there's been a kind of tipping point.
Do you think?
I thought I was optimistic.
Do you think?
Well, I wanted to go back to something that you said, Mike, and this sort of takes this notion of extraction jobs to a local level. That an interesting concept or interesting theme that came up when I did research on this topic is that men are primarily involved in men primarily have jobs in the extraction industries, right? Men are coal miners. Men are working on those oil rigs in the middle of the ocean. That these are men's jobs. And so it's interesting that we see that this same kind of workers in the extraction industry also supporting our current president and this current, I think, last breath perhaps, of a current way of thinking that's based upon fossil fuels, based upon a sort of male patriarchy, based upon late capitalism. So I think we see we see gender emerging in the same way politically and in this case economically.
Yes, that's.
So do you think there's a kind of tipping point? It seems to me I just have the feeling now that the discussion of climate change in the U.S. is finally breaking through or washing over, almost like water, over a flood of the highly economic and highly funded opposition to the idea of climate change.
I wonder whether that's true, Steve, because, you know, we're living in our bubble, right? We talk to our friends and they become more urgent about it. I haven't done the research. Maybe you know something about this, Frankie. What are the people in the Midwest who have voted for Trump? Are they worried about it, or do they believe it's just BS?
I think that people are beginning to believe. I think that the statistics on people who answer, I believe climate change is happening. The statistics are higher and higher, increasing. So more and more people are saying, yes, this is a problem. I believe that the tipping point will have to come politically, and I think that's going to depend on what happens in the national elections in 2020. I think that if the current administration has another 4 years, we could be going down a very, very serious slope. I think that if the administration shifts and moves quickly, I think that something is going to happen, and we're going to start to see sustainable energy becoming affordable again, and we'll start to see a shift.
I want to get back to, we're a local radio show. I want to get back to the local things that are happening. You got the Women's March. We got Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance. Tell us how to get involved in both of those things once again, Dr. Reamer, if you would.
So the Women's March on again January 18th is here in Sedona. It's every group that's active in Sedona will be involved. So look at the Sedona Action Network webpage. Just Google Sedona Action Network, and you'll find a marvelous calendar that will give you all of the particulars about the Women's March. And if you have not been active locally, that would be a great day. Put it on your calendar to meet some people. Come to my talk.
January 16th.
January 16th, right before the Women's March in Clarkdale at Yavapai College at 11:30. I'm also speaking on February 18th with the Yavapai Democrats at Red Rooster in Cottonwood.
Oh yeah.
Starting at 5, 5 to 6 is an open meet and greet, and we'll start talking at 6:15.
That's the third Tuesday. What's the date again?
That's February 18th at Red Rooster in Cottonwood.
We have we got Jim Areola makes us some soup. The one of the proprietors of the Red Rooster. There's some food there. It's all gratis. It's all free. If there's some wine available, there's all kinds of. We have a pretty good time at our meetings. We're not Republicans. We have a great time. And then we got Dr. Reamer is going to be talking to us about climate change, and women's roles in it. We want to mention the initials here. NAZCCA, Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance .org. NAZCCA.org.
Wait, yeah, that was too fast.
Thank
One
you,
more
Mike.
Time.
NAZCCA.org.
They need to add a few more initials.
A few more Z's.
I'm in a acronym business these days. The social.
But we
services.
Need longer acronyms.
We need longer acronyms.
So
right.
I do want to add that NAZCA, Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance, has been very active locally, both in Flagstaff, from Flagstaff to Prescott. My colleague Stephen Summer regularly gives talks. We have an educative goal of, and we're working, we are a bottom-up organization. NAZCA has been very successful in Flagstaff and Sedona in pushing the city councils to develop a climate action plan. So Flagstaff has already passed their climate action plan and is now meeting with groups to think about what that is going to look like locally. Sedona is currently working on passing a climate Sedona action on a Sedona climate action plan on how we as a community want to deal with climate change. Hopefully, adding requirements about water to any development plans would certainly be one way that I would like the city to move forward in thinking about climate. Contacting your local council people and voicing your support for climate initiatives locally is also a very important way of getting involved.
Yeah, that's true.
And there are other cities around the country who are doing the same thing. Missoula, where I spent in Montana, where I spend my summers, the city council just passed a resolution or law that by 2030, the city of Missoula will be carbon, should be. And intends to be carbon neutral. So it's happening locally in many places in the country, regardless of what our current federal government.
I think that's a good point.
Absolutely.
I think that's
absolutely
an excellent.
And we
point.
Want to talk about that. We want to talk about Cottonwood has a city election in 2020 coming up. We have three council people and the mayor are going to be up for re-election. Ruben Hottigy, Tosca Gabrielle Henry, the new person they just appointed. We had one person leave, one person come on, and the mayor, Tim Alinsky, are all be up for re-election. And it was a great time to bring up climate change and to see if they could support this kind of thing. And you know how elections are these days. We get started on them pretty early. And
what I'm hearing from you and from our guest is that dealing with climate change sort of has to be political. Maybe it doesn't have to be partisan, because it really shouldn't be a partisan issue, right? I think we all agree with that. But it has to be political. So a lot of what has to deal with climate change is a political organization, political action. It can't be just something that somebody else somewhere takes care of, right?
Well, that seems to be the case. I mean, certainly there are individual responses, right? That there are vegans who argue that if we all become vegan, we will be addressing climate change. There are people who argue recycling or outlawing plastic bags would be strategies for individuals to move forward. But again, those strategies have become political. In our state, a local municipality is not allowed to pass a law that says you can't have plastic bags, right? These presumptive kind of rules that happen at the state level.
We've talked about that a lot, what the state does in taking away local control.
Yes.
And I think that's a good point.
Yes.
But Klaus, is
Frankie, are there any companies that are voluntarily, because they can see the light, or rather the darkness at the end of the tunnel, that are doing something voluntarily because they see what's coming down the pike, or are they just totally oblivious?
That's an excellent question. I think there are municipalities, as you just suggested right before, that are certainly adopting policies that will address climate change. Here in Sedona, the city council we've read this in the Red Rock News, put money into solar panels above the parking lot of city council. So I think at the municipal level, yes. I think at, in terms of the private sector, certainly there are companies that are looking at how to better recycle. There was a great article in the New York Times yesterday about a entrepreneurial couple that are making artisanal cocktails by resourcing the scraps from restaurants. And they're going around the country making different kinds of artisanal cocktails based on what remnants they can find at restaurants.
What's an artisanal cocktail?
It's a fancy cocktail that has a creative, handcrafted recipe.
So I think the main takeaway is that women are worldwide, there are more women in the world, there are certainly a lot of children now, more children in the world, are affected mostly more intensely by climate change, and that women are also doing more about it. That's
exactly,
my take.
Exactly, in a nutshell.
Let me get some of these announcements in. Democrats of the Red Rocks are going to have their breakfast on December 18th at 8 a.m.
December, I think it's the 19th, is it?
December 19th at 8 a.m.
Right.
December 19th at 8 a.m. will be Democrats of the Red Rocks monthly breakfast. They have Alessandra Navidad. What a great name.
Perfect
for,
name for the
Christmas time,
time
yeah.
of year.
Alessandra Navidad is the executive director of the ACLU of Arizona. She's been on this show many times, and she has come up. But always, needless to say, maybe not, the ACLU of Arizona is a very busy organization because there's so much to do. We want to talk about, as we already mentioned, the meeting at the Red Rooster in Cottonwood. Yavapai County Democrats of Cottonwood will have their meeting, in which Dr. Reamer will be at. We want to mention December 11th. There's also a professor of politics and international affairs from NAU, Dr. Sheila Nair.
Yes, my colleague and friend.
She's been on the show.
She will be at the Mary Fisher Theater on Wednesday, this Wednesday, day after tomorrow. We want to mention Corner Democracy. If you guys have been wondering who those people are, mostly women, by the way, out on the corner of Coffee Pot and 89A, that's a part of local activism called Corner Democracy. You can join them also. You can find some details on the Door, Democrats of the Red Rocks website, and other places on the Sedona Action Network website. You can find lots about Corner Democracy. These folks believe, and many of us believe, that demonstrating is a good idea. You got a microphone there.
And don't forget that next week's broadcast will be dealing exactly with some of these issues that concern water.
Okay, folks, we'll see you next time. Thanks.
Thank you all.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.